This is North Shore Today. With Rick Moore, I'm Bill Newell. Great to have you with us on this Friday. In today's program, we'll hear from Gloucester Fire Chief Eric Smith.
And for those that listen to the radio, the scanner, we've got a process where there's an internal page that goes overhead in every station and all spaces of each station that take place before that radio transmission.
Also checking in with us on the program is Lynn Items news editor Steve Krause.
You do have to weigh all sides. You know, I don't think you just go plowing into something without considering what the downside is. But once you measure the upside and once you measure the downside, then you have to make a reasoned decision as to where to go based on those two extremes.
Smith and Krause today on North Shore Today. Again, Bill Newell with Rick Moore on this Friday at, leading up to our high school football. We'll tell you all about that in just a moment or so. But Rick, we've got Eric Smith and Steve Krause coming up. Steve, I know in the item today they had a little story on a couple of people from the North Shore down in Washington and New York or some of the other cities where the Pope is visiting. We touched very briefly about that. And Steve and I will talk a little bit about that as well, Steve Krause, about the papal visit and whatever. But so we have a little discussion on that this morning. Don't want it to feel like we're totally ignoring the Pope's visit here to the States, but But anyways, that's one thing we have on the program.
Yeah, and I talked with Gloucester Fire Chief Eric Smith. I stop in once in a while, you know, maybe get just sort of a state of the fire department type conversation. I'd like to do that also with other fire departments in the area. I'm going to work on that. But Chief Smith now, he's in his third year at Gloucester after coming over from Michigan, and he gives us sort of an update as to how things are progressing with the fire department, and a contract will be expiring in 2016, so there'll be some discussions about that as well. And just a good conversation, state of fire safety in Gloucester.
And speaking of fires, that big mill story in Haverhill, news was out, I think it was out yesterday, but that four young boys set that fire, and they had set a fire earlier in the week at that location. And so what a tragedy, and putting our firefighters into danger and stuff. I guess those guys are, kids are still have not been released yet. When you're young, you make some mistakes, and that seems like a pretty big mistake to have made. But causing that mill fire, which was a huge fire, when was that? Just about a week ago, right? Or less than a week ago.
How old were the kids, Bill?
You know, I don't know, Rick. I actually don't know. So I just know that they had figured it out that these four were involved in that piece. So, and you know, that stuff happens, and unfortunately they made a big mistake.
Yeah, well, sometimes the mistakes and stupidity go hand in hand, and I sometimes I'm just blown away by it. But you know, the Pope's in the country, so we have to be compassionate and forgiving. But God, you know, sometimes you have to take a harsh stand on this stuff. It's funny. I mentioned the other day, I'm neither Democrat nor Republican, but I waver. You know that middle line. I waver from left to right, from right to left sometimes. And with stupid crimes, I sort of go to the right a little bit.
All right. Well, speaking of getting from one place to another, the weekend commuter rail service between Lynn and North Station in both directions is going to be stopped due to the construction that they have there. We had a post on that several weeks ago on our website, and I think this is just the second weekend of it, but I think there are only two weekends of it. So just beware if you're riding the train down from the north, and that it comes to, when it comes down to Lynn, I guess you get bussed from there on. But those of you that do that, I'm sure you already know all of this information anyways, but just a little tiny reminder for Saturday and Sunday.
There's an interesting forum coming up in Gloucester on Sunday. Cape Ann Forum is holding a forum in at City Hall on Sunday, September 27, from 7 to 9 p.m., that is. And Charlie Sennett and British photojournalist Gary Knight of the Ground Truth Project on the freedom of expression in a new media environment at the Cape Ann Forum. This is in the Kairos Auditorium at City Hall on Ninedale Avenue. It's free from 7 to 9 p.m. And Charlie Sennett is the co-founder of Global Post. And he was in Lower Manhattan sitting in a diner when the World Trade Center took the first hit And we're talking about February 26, 1993, when nobody thought it was a terrorist attack at that time. But since then, Charlie Sennett has documented much of the terrorist activity and the battle against it. And he will be talking about this along with the photojournalist Gary Knight at Kairos Auditorium on Sunday from 7 to 9. That's at Gloucester City Hall. Also, Bill, just want to mention that the Gloucester preliminary election is this coming Tuesday. And I believe there are races in every ward. Gloucester has five wards. So there will be voting in all the wards for city council candidates to whittle it down to two. And two in each, I believe. And then, I'm not even sure about that. But
I think that's how it would work. Yeah, I'm pretty sure.
Yeah. And then the mayor's race, there are five candidates for mayor, and that will be whittled down to two. So again, the election taking place in Gloucester, preliminary election on Tuesday. It says right here, let's see, all city polls will include the preliminary race for mayor. The Ward 1 ballot also includes a preliminary race for Ward 1 city council. So I guess it's okay. Ward 1 only that has more than two candidates.
Gotcha. Okay. And Lynn, I know, does not have a preliminary election because there's they can handle that in the general election. I'm not sure about some of the other communities that do have races. So, that's coming up fast, isn't it? I mean, preliminaries are in September, but and here we are coming to the end of September. So, wow. That's right.
Yeah, and then you got probably five or six more weeks till that first Tuesday in November. So it is rolling along. And speaking of rolling along, exciting weekend, Bill, with football. The locals get into their league action, and everybody's pumped up. I talked with Coach Tony Zerilli in Gloucester yesterday. Did Tim talk with Coach Bauer? Do you know?
I believe so. Oh no! Yes, I believe so. Yeah.
Okay, well, the big, huge game tonight in Peabody, Beverly at Peabody, and these are two teams that, are penciled in for to battle all the way. Peabody 1-1, Beverly 2-0, and then over in Lynn, you've got your games. We've got another game tomorrow, so, we're rolling along here. It's just season's moving along, but it's getting into the really interesting part.
Right, we're into that. We're not. Everyone's into the league thing, though, Rick, because Lynn English is at Winthrop tonight. I'm just trying to think how that works. So some people are into the league schedule. Revere at Lynn Classical has to be league, right? Or are we?
Yeah, and that's Well, no wait. Revere's in the small.
They're in the small. That's right.
Yeah, so you're right.
We got one more weekend. We got one more weekend then. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
But I thought Beverly, I don't know why, I just thought Beverly was in the large. No, they're not, though, are they?
Beverly is in the large this year.
But Peabody's got to be in the large, and they're playing each other. But maybe it's because of the Thanksgiving matchup or whatever. Boy, we should know this.
We got to get Les Murray back on the program.
Yeah.
Anyway, it's going to be great football, and Gloucester is at Swampscott tomorrow. Our video game is in Lynn tonight.
Yeah, it is. It's Classical versus Revere. And Revere has a quarterback, Dan Murphy, who we we don't have the feature up yet. It'll go up today. We have a video with him. He threw for a couple of touchdowns in their game last week, 130 yards. So we'll have a little bit more on that today. Our football preview post will go up just a little bit later on this morning. And, there's a bunch of games going on tonight, obviously. Another one of interest is Danvers at Marblehead. That'll be a very interesting game to see how that one goes. Both teams off to a good start, and Marblehead's played a very tough schedule, and they had a very big win against Cambridge last week. And then, as you mentioned, Rick, Swampscott-Gloucester, that game will be tomorrow, Saturday afternoon, with a noon kickoff and live video of that game. So we're looking forward to that. Second time we've been back over to Swampscott. We've had all the Swampscott games on this year so far in the first 3 weeks of the season. And then there's another big game on the North Shore. It's on Sunday, but Everett plays at St. John's Prep. That is a noon kickoff. Both teams come into that contest 2-0. And Rick, I wanted to mention one other sports story here today. Yesterday, the Swampscott field hockey team defeated Beverly 1-0 over in Swampscott. So congratulations to them. They're now 4-1 on the season. So congratulations to Coach Jamie Spano and the Swampscott Big Blue field hockey team for their win against North Shore powerhouse Beverly High School.
Yeah, and Marblehead cross country just rolling along as they came away with a 1-point margin over Gloucester's cross country team this week, yesterday, I guess it was, and I'm trying to think here. Rockport boys soccer tied Linfield, and I guess to some extent that would be considered a victory. Rockport, of course, the smallest school in the conference, and you know, Linfield, one of the bigger schools in the Cape Ann League. And I believe I read somewhere also that Gloucester boys soccer won another game. So that's what I have on my end.
All right. Okay, so coming up on the program, Gloucester Fire Chief Eric Smith, and then Steve Kraus, the news editor of the Daily Item. So stay with us right here on MSONewsSports.com.
At Gloucester Fire Headquarters with Gloucester Fire Chief Eric Smith, I'm Rick Moore. This is MSONewsSports.com. And Chief, it's been a while since we've gotten together. And dare I say it, and say it probably with a prayer of thanksgiving, not a lot of bad stuff going on in the last year, but quite the contrary, maybe a lot of good stuff.
Yeah, actually, it's been, you know, the good has certainly outweighed the bad. You know, knock on wood, not to be superstitious, but, you know, our fire volume and the losses to fire, both in life, injury, and property, are fairly reduced compared to what we've seen in previous years. And, you know, I don't really have the scientific evaluation and research to back and prove the reasoning behind that. It's still a little too early in the statistics to be able to make that kind of assumption, and it's even hard to tie even with the data. But with the conversion to the 56-hour work week for the firefighters and all the stations being open, all our apparatus being staffed, and a significant effort on the part of the department in conjunction with the union and the membership here, we've done a lot of work on the fire prevention side that, you know, had to be backburnered and held off when the stations weren't fully staffed. You know, I mean, the run volume has gone up, but we have more personnel on duty, and we're still able to throw those fire prevention functions, the in-service inspections of all of the facilities in town, you know, spending more time with the schools. We've secured grant funding for not only the SAFE grant for going into the schools and teaching fire prevention and safety, but also the Senior SAFE grant, which is upcoming this year. And so, you know, with the lieutenants that we've added and have officers at every station on every piece of apparatus, we're able to refocus on fire prevention and do the things that we really want to do in the community, get involved in almost every event that we have in town, and get out there, you know, with the touch of trucks and going to the high schools and the junior high and all of their events, not only promoting the fire service as a career, but really pushing the fire prevention message. Mm-hmm. And so I think, and again, we can't really prove that, but I think it's made a difference. I think people are paying more attention, you know, kind of the scare of that initial real early hit with the brush fires that we had, that quieted right down fairly quickly. I think the public has been very responsive. This community has always been very responsive to public safety, and they take it seriously, and they demonstrated that in their demand for open fire stations, in what appears to be compliance with being careful in the woods, being careful in their homes, mm-hmm. and respecting the things that traditionally and typically cause fires, which in most cases is our own mistakes and or neglect, lack of maintenance, those types of things. And so I'm pretty happy that what seems like the message has been delivered and received and followed up on by the community. So, you know, my thanks go out to everybody in the community for stepping up and doing what they can to promote fire safety and live that fire safety and fire prevention message in their home with their own families.
Talking with the police chief, Lenny Campanello, in another interview, and he said pretty much the same thing from their standpoint, from the police standpoint, in terms of safety and cooperation from the public. Chief, you've added a position since last we talked, the assistant fire chief, I believe it's called?
That's correct. So we've had an assistant chief that also takes on the role of the emergency management director, which unloads that responsibility that rests with my position originally. So I, you know, had that role for, you know, the first 3 years that I was here, and once we added that position here in the office, it's given us a much more time again to focus on the things beyond just responding to incidents and the day-to-day management of the fire department. We've been able to do more strategic thinking instead of being so tactical in our actions and just, you know, responding to those immediate problems, immediate needs, and worrying about, you know, the call volume in and of itself. There's more to the fire department than just running out the door when the bell goes off. And so this has allowed me and given me the additional help that I needed in the office for us to push these programs forward. So it's been a great addition. You know, not only have we added the assistant, you know, fire chief to the department, Tom Aiello, who's done a fabulous job managing that and emergency management. We've been had the ability to add a master mechanic, a civilian position to the department, and so the maintenance not only of ourselves, if you will, with having the time and the command staff, as well as adding lieutenants in the outskirts stations to all the apparatus. So our command structure has been bolstered up to where safety on the fire ground has been enhanced. Our ability to provide critically important fire prevention and community messaging and working with the community and focusing on preventive things and helpful things before an emergency versus being a reactionary department to where we just go call to call to call. Guys have always done a great job with that, you know, and I've seen improvement in that because we've had more opportunity to do training. Mm-hmm. With all four stations open, we can rotate that call volume and pull companies in to do additional training that we just didn't have the time to get to previously. So, you know, everybody's done a great job adapting to the new three platoon system to the three group system versus four, and that additional number of hours. So it's been great so far. The only negative piece really that we've been dealing with is just the number of injuries we've had within the department. And it hasn't been due to the work schedule. It's been a myriad of different types of injuries, and they haven't come because somebody's working more. It's, you know, the injuries that have been suffered have been acute and emergent, if you will, you know, twisting a knee in a woods fire, you know, a patient grabbing a handrail on the stairs and a guy injuring his shoulder, another guy, you know, injuring his shoulder in a basement fire. And so those things weren't due to them working more hours. Right. They were due to the circumstance that they found themselves in because, again, it's a physical job. It's a dangerous job. Everybody already identifies that. And unfortunately, it's kind of we've had lightning strike multiple times at a bad time, so it's impacted our overall staffing. We've been struggling with nearly 10% of our workforce being injured, and so that's been the difficult part, really, on the budget side of things, that the public hasn't seen an impact in the service delivery, but we're hoping to manage the budget so we don't see an impact in that service delivery.
Well, to borrow a phrase from skiing, where they say skiing is an inherently dangerous sport, I'm guessing that firefighting is an inherently dangerous occupation.
Yeah, unfortunately, that is very true. So we've managed to at least be able to get most of these guys that have been injured out to the right docks and get the repairs underway, but some of them have been significant enough that a few people might not make it back on the job in full capacity and retire. So we're waiting on all those decisions to be made, and it's just a long process. And, you know, I feel for the guys that are stuck in that situation because these guys are workers. Right. They want to get back to the job. They're the kind of people that take action and make things happen quickly. And when you are in a process that doesn't allow you to move quickly, it can be frustrating. So, you know, my heart goes out to them, and hopefully they're managing it well at home. But, you know, we can't wait to get them back to work. That's for sure.
I want to talk budget down the road, not necessarily today, but my final question for today is it has to do with a technical question from a resident, me. I listen to the scanner to see what's going on, and whenever there's something that takes place on the radio with the fire department, I hear a check-in of sorts from the outlying fire departments. I'll hear Magnolia, East Gloucester. What's the other one? Bayview.
No, East Gloucester, but West Gloucester.
Okay, West Gloucester. That's it. West Gloucester, Bayview. I'll hear that, and it's frequent. What's the protocol? What are they doing?
So our policy and the way our dispatching works is, and And for those that listen to the radio, the scanner, you know, we've got a process where there's an internal page that goes overhead in every station and all spaces of each station that take place before that radio transmission. So you'll hear the strike of an alarm, a single bell, which indicates that an alarm of whatever sort has been struck. What you don't hear in between that alarm and the radio transmission is the internal dispatching and assigning of assets and resources to an incident. Mm-hmm. And so once that takes place, that is repeated, and that's the part that the public, you know, picks up on, that, you know, the Gloucester Fire is responding to whatever the situation is with whatever apparatus have been assigned, and what time that call came in. And so there's a bit of a delay, and people don't really pick up on that when that bell strikes that there's communications taking place in the station. So what you're hearing is any time an engine is assigned to a call and there is movement of an engine, even on EMS calls, if an engine is assigned, all the outskirts stations need to respond that they've heard the call and acknowledge the call, because they're next due to that station for coverage of either downtown or the outskirts stations. If that house has been cleared because that engine is out, then all the other stations need to know that, okay, I'm now first due to Magnolia because Magnolia is out and not able to respond. They're already assigned to a call. So I'm first due to anything that gets announced and dispatched over the air to Magnolia. So it keeps everybody, you know, in the loop, so to speak, as to what is available, and if you should expect that you're covering a different portion of town. And, you know, it kind of gets your game face on just a little bit more.
Yeah.
You know, these guys are basically on standby all day long, and this just keeps you in the loop as to who's doing what, where, and when. And so it you know, it's just the way we manage to make sure that everybody's in the loop, and that, and it's secondarily that recheck, frequent recheck, if you will, of our communication system, that our page all system that I explained that goes out before the radio calls working, that the radios are working. So, you know, that it gives us a status check, not only on equipment, but to make sure that everybody's head's in the game.
All right. Thanks, Chief. We'll talk again soon.
Absolutely.
All right. That's Gloucester Fire Chief Eric Smith with MSONewsSports.com. I'm Rick Moore.
This is MSONewsSports.com, and we are joined by the news editor of the Daily Item in Lynn, Steve Krause. And, Steve, welcome back for another of our weekly visits.
How you doing, Bill?
Great to have you with us here today on the program, but a number of different things. Let's talk about the pulp, and you know, maybe how it impacts the local newspaper, in this case the Item, and what's the thinking going on, and what's happening with coverage of the pulp.
Well, we have local people down there in Washington today, they won some kind of a contest to go down there and listen to them, and I was watching it for a little while before I had to come in here. And you know, he obviously, just because of the fact that he is the Pope, anything he says has long-reaching implications. And, you know, and his concentration on the environment in particular, he seems to be very concerned about going forward, the status of the environment and nature. And I think it's a good thing. I think the fact that he's reaching out and talking about these issues is very good. Whether it does any good, I don't know.
You know, he's you know, in his previous work, he's taken the vow of poverty. Yeah. He's you know, he's very, you know, he and they did make a case of him riding in that Fiat, albeit a relatively new Fiat, I might add, Steve, but a late model Fiat. But it just sends it does send a different message.
Also, I think it's very noteworthy that rather than dine with Congress, he chose to dine with homeless people. It shows you where his heart is. And you know, I'm Catholic too, you know, and I understand that people sometimes have concern about him and some of the things that he's saying, but I think it shows that his heart's in the right place.
Yeah. All right. Anything else on that, on the Pope coverage? All right. Let's, this is a totally unrelated kind of note here, but I was looking at today's the Thursday edition of the Daily Item, and there's a picture of the wind turbine. And you go by these wind turbines. Different cities and towns have them. They're out in the countryside, but there is one on the Linway in Lynn. And and your story, I've never heard this, seen this before, but it said that basically it generates to the city of Lynn or to the Water and Sewer Commission $250,000 worth of revenue. So that's not bad.
Yes, anything I would think that of that nature that can put some money back into the system that's running it certainly benefits everybody in terms of what they might pay on rates or taxes or energy or anything like that. And this is water sewer, so it would probably keep rates that I pay as a Linner down a bit.
I think I'm going to try to see if I can get one of these, build a couple of these in my yard, Steve, these windmills.
Boy, I'll tell you what, they are impressive looking, aren't they? And you know, it kind of reminds me of the objections that the people down the Cape had of the windmill project down there. And, you know, you ask yourself why. I mean, I go by it every day, too, because I'm at some point on the Linway, and yeah, I don't even notice it anymore. So I wonder about what that was all about, the Cape and the objections and stuff like that.
Well, again, the windmill debate, I think that, you know, you've seen these wind farms, too, as you travel around, and they're on the hillsides where you might see 30 of these things up on the side of a hill or a side of a mountain. And, you know, granted, it's not that attractive, but yet on the other hand, as we were talking about earlier, as far as the energy and the it's generating energy without any pollution, it's clearly something that we really need to be looking at.
I think anything that you're trying to do in government or as a matter of public policy, you do have to weigh all sides. You know, I don't think you just go plowing into something without considering what the downside is. But once you measure the upside and once you measure the downside, then you have to make a reasoned decision as to where to go based on those two extremes. And in this case, I think there's a tremendous upside, regardless of what some people think it looks like. There's a tremendous upside to it.
And we're talking with Steve Krause, news editor of the Daily Item in Lynn. Talk about big names. We've got the Pope and another big name guy, Keith Lockhart, coming to the Lynn Auditorium soon, and with I guess five fellow musicians for a show it's not recently remodeled because it's been remodeled for quite a while, but the refurbished Lynn Auditorium, which is really an outstanding venue. So, anyways, are you excited? Are you going to see Keith?
I'd like to. What this is it's a confluence of two anniversaries. North Shore Community College, which is sponsoring the event, is concluding its 50th anniversary observance, and Keith has been with the Pops 20 years. And I spoke with Keith the other day, and you know, for a story that we're doing, and Keith Lockhart says, you know, I'm not much for anniversaries. He said he doesn't even like to celebrate his birthday. But he was amenable to doing this, and what it's going to be is a reminiscence of sorts of him, plus his observations on where popular culture is going when you combine it with the internet and everything like that. Interspersed with all this, he's got the brass section of the Pops, plus the principal horn player for the Esplanade Orchestra. And they're going to play some tunes kind of intermingled with what he has to say. And it sounds like he's a pretty interesting guy. You know, if you're an old core, I've been listening to the Pops probably since I was 10 years old. And if you're an old core, Arthur Fiedler, this is the formula for the Boston Pops. He's got some news for you on that front because it just doesn't work anymore. People are too particular about what they want to listen to. And that smorgasbord kind of type of music isn't where it's at. And, you know, like everything else, the newspaper industry has had to adapt to the internet culture. So do they.
So does the Boston Pops, absolutely. So can I fish for any more details, any other tidbit, anything interesting with Keith Lockhart?
Other than that he's a good guy, you know, that he lives in Brookline, he's got a wife and kids that he likes to play, to be with when he's not conducting. Yeah. The one thing that I kind of got out of him that I really was not expecting to hear is that I was going to ask him what he has on his iPad, you know, his iTunes.
Yeah.
Before I got a chance to do it, he said, well, I don't really have anything on my iTunes because I don't listen to music when I'm not working. He said, I listen to it enough while I'm working, so when I don't listen to it, when I'm not working, I'm usually doing something else. So I just got this image of him as like 24/7 listening to music. And it's like anything else, I guess. If you're a carpenter, when you go home, the last thing you want to do is build something.
Wouldn't that be a great story if we find out that Keith Lockhart is listening to like sports radio nonstop, you know, from before he gets to the pops till afterwards?
That would be hilarious, but I'm sure he'd have slit his wrist by if he ever had to.
Exactly. Steve, I don't know what anything else we can talk about, but, you know, anything else news with the item at all, or any coverage, upcoming coverage, or things of those things of note for you?
Well, we're just, you know, we're trying to present I shouldn't say present an image. That's not right because, you know, the news is the news. But, you know, we're trying to gear our coverage, as I think I said the last time, toward people and what they do and what their interests are and ways that, you know, they contribute to the whole of the city. And I think we're doing that. I think we're doing a pretty good job with that.
Yeah, Rick and I were talking the other day on the program about some of the cultural things, and you were talking about that with Arthur Fiedler and so on, and I noticed in the look section of the item, I think I was in the item a couple of days ago, talk about our cultural and when it changed. It's the 25th anniversary of Jerry Springer, Steve.
Yeah. Well, hopefully we're trying not to duplicate the Springer culture with the Lynn item.
I was not going that way at all. No. We've just done these cultural things, and it's the little tidbits that you read about, and that's why people pick up the paper. It's like, oh, my gosh, that's right. It's been 25 years.
Well, you know, you talk about that, though, and then and I have a column in the paper about this today, and not that I want to toot my horn. I was doing this on a Thursday, by the way. Not that I want to toot my horn, but how much of the Donald Trump phenomenon is based on the fact that right now in this country, entertainment is the most important thing to people? How are we going to be entertained? And I submit that even though there is a message behind Trump that, you know, people have just had it with scripted, you know, bland, just to throw out a name, I'm not indicting her, but just to throw out a name, Hillary Clinton brand of campaigning, you know, where you need a focus group to tell me what day it is. He's off the cuff. He's shooting from the hip. And, you know, even though some of the things he says are pretty crazy, people like that image of him. And the reason why people like that image of him is because he's entertaining. You open up the paper every day to see what idiotic thing Donald Trump said today. And, you know, it's not the first time I've seen that, but it's kind of creeping more and more into areas that I'm not sure we want that kind of entertainment.
No, I know. And I don't know if you watched that last presidential debate,
yeah.
Steve. You did. Okay. And, like, right off the bat, I mean, I'm sitting at home, I'm watching it, and not knowing that it was going to be 3 hours long, but just beginning it, and the first words out of his mouth are, hey, Rand Paul's at 1%, he doesn't even belong on the stage. Now, who would ever say something like that, you know, like, I mean, and it wasn't even a question about Rand Paul. I mean, the guy just is breaking all the rules, as you talk about, and people find it entertaining, and the ratings are going through the roof, as the Donald would say.
Yes, except that we're not auditioning here for a comedian and nightclub comic. We're auditioning for somebody who's got the future of the nation in his hands. And there are some aspects of this where the twain should not necessarily meet. And I would submit that this is one of them. I mean, I think there is a way. I mean, you have to probably go back to the first Bill Clinton campaign to find it, because I think he kind of managed to combine those two things very well. But there is a way that you can be interesting and engaging and somewhat spontaneous and still stick to what needs to be talked about.
Yeah. And without the personal insults. All right, Steve. I'm a loser. No, we'll step aside here. But Steve, we're great talking with you, and we'll talk with you again soon.
Bill, thank you very much.
Steve Kraus, news editor of the Daily Item in Lynn.
All right, don't forget, new program on Fridays at 10 a.m. It's Trending Now with Josh Arnold every Friday. And if you miss it live, we are live from 10 to 11. It will be posted shortly thereafter. Just go up and grab it on demand. And all our football games will be on demand as well. And we're working on getting our video on demand, so stay tuned.
Yeah, people are asking about that one. And our football broadcast this weekend, two games tonight. The video game, Revere playing at Classical, and the radio game, Beverly at Peabody. Both games kick off at 7 o'clock tonight. No doubleheader tonight from Lynn, thank goodness. No. and on Saturday afternoon, tomorrow afternoon, Gloucester playing at Swampscott. That's a noon kickoff, and we have live video of that game. And looks like another great weather weekend here on the North Shore, so I hope you folks get out and enjoy that. I have my wife, Rick, has, like yourself, you're on Facebook, and we have a well, my nephew lives out west, and I think they're let's see, I'm not even sure what state it is now because they have moved around a couple of times. But anyways, his wife is posting foliage pictures this week out, not in Colorado, but they're further out, and I was surprised at that. So foliage is coming, but these were brilliant colors out west already in foliage. I thought they would be behind us, if anything. So I'm a little surprised, but it must be up in the higher mountains where this is happening.
Yeah, I have even better news than that. There are four ski areas out west that already have snow. Now, they're not open yet, but they do have snow.
Really? Wow.
Yeah.
Yes, I saw somebody. Yeah, I was checking it out this morning and before starting this. And, there's always somebody on Facebook that's it seems like every week during the summer, somebody posts that 20-inch snowstorm photo of the streets and the tire tracks going down the middle of the street, and just and the headline coming soon to a neighborhood near you or whatever. So, or to your neighborhood.
Yeah, as though we can't forget it anyway. We need a reminder, right?
I know we know about it. Hey, so special thanks to our guests again, Eric Smith, the Fire Chief in Gloucester, and of course Steve Kraus, the news editor of the Daily Item in Lynn, and I guess we'll see you at the games on Friday night. And this is it for North Shore Today with Rick Moore. I'm Bill Newell. Have a great weekend, everybody. And this is MSONewsSports.com. Don't miss a rare opportunity to see Keith Lockhart up front and personal at the Lynn Auditorium. He'll be playing with five hand-selected pop musicians October 1st. This is a great chance to see Keith in an intimate setting where he'll sing, play, conduct, and talk about his life. Then enjoy a 30th anniversary screening of John Hughes' classic, The Breakfast Club, followed by a discussion and Q&A with 80s superstar icon and novelist Molly Ringwald. In addition, just 20 tickets left to the Super VIP After Party with Molly. For tickets, visit LynnAuditorium.com or call 781-599-SHOW.
Fact is, including the commute, people spend 10 hours a day at work. No wonder they're forced to buy car insurance in 15 minutes. They just don't have time to go meet with someone. Well, Columbia Insurance has an alternative. The insurance professionals at Columbia Insurance Agency will meet with you at your workplace. Even better, we'll go to the registry and bring your plates back to you at work, free of charge. At Columbia Insurance Agency, we come to you, and we really do. Visit ColumbiaInsuranceAgency.net and set up an appointment today. That's ColumbiaInsuranceAgency.net.
The Porthole Restaurant is a North Shore dining tradition. Enjoy waterfront dining in a casual atmosphere. The Porthole features outstanding quality, quantity, and price. Known for a full variety of menu selections, you must try the award-winning clam chowder, fresh off the boat seafood, lobsters, prime rib, steaks and chops, daily luncheon and dinner specials. They feature spacious and well-appointed function rooms. The Porthole, a great value, a great dining experience. Open for lunch and dinner 7 days a week on the water on the Linway in Lynn.
Since 1897, the Lynn Museum has celebrated the history of one of America's most consequential cities. Recently merged with Lynn Arts, we are working to build a dynamic cultural hub where our past comes to life and new art is created. Join us for the final month of our baseball exhibit, America's Favorite Pastime, A Lynn Perspective, open until Saturday, October 3rd. The Lynn Museum is located at 590 Washington Street and open Wednesday and Friday 12 to 4, Thursday 12 to 7, and Saturday 10 to 3. Find us online at lynnmuseum.com.
Team up with the Daily Item at itemlive.com, your community information connection. The Daily Item features colorful, timely stories highlighting the North Shore. The new Look page focuses on people, places, and things. The Item is presenting news in a user-friendly format. Don't miss any local news or reading features on your neighbors. Check out The Item today. It's all new every day. For home delivery, call 781-593-7700 or go to itemlive.com.